everyone. Thanks for joining us today. It's Angela Stevens. I'm with the podcast Refocus with Angela. And I am so delighted to introduce you to our guest today. Many of you probably know him, have listened to him on an ongoing basis. So it's a really great delight of ours to have him join us today. And that guest is Jeff Copper. You probably know him from his podcast, which is Dig Coaching. It's Attention Talk Radio is actually his podcast. He's got a website, which is digcoaching.com. And he also has a video, which is Attention Talk. So he speaks, he presents, he coaches. What did I forget in all of that, Jeff? I know there's got to be more.
That's good enough.
Okay, well, let me tell you all how I came about getting introduced to this individual, because I was interviewing another guest and they said, you have got to meet this person and you've got to talk to this person. And so I didn't know Jeff at first. And then I ran into him at a conference. And so we have been going on and on about having this meeting today. So we're delighted to get started. So I want to jump right in here. I'm going to throw you for a few loops, Jeff. I have to, because you're good at this, right?
Sure.
But I'm always fascinated with how people got their start and, you know, how they got going. And I don't know if anyone ever asked you that question. So tell us first, you know, what got you to the place that you're doing now, whether that is coaching or having your podcast or whatever. Tell us what it was that drew you into the industry.
Wow.
See, I knew it. I got him right off the bat.
There. No, I'm trying to see how I can condense this. So yeah. Real simply, I was diagnosed with dyslexia at age 9, and I always struggled. And in middle school and college, you know, I had all the people telling me what I was supposed to do. And quite honestly, I got kind of frustrated by it all. Mm-hmm. And I was fortunate enough to go to college on a swimming scholarship. And when I went there, a few things happened. One, I had to figure it out by myself. And it was kind of cool because as a scholarship athlete, I got unlimited tutors. And what I've come to realize was actually very much maturity at that point in time. I was like, why not use the tutors? Why don't I make this easy? And most people don't ask for help, particularly that age. It's actually a sign of maturity. I didn't know it then, but I'm like, let's do this easy way. But really, when the experts weren't around, I had a sink or swim, and I never forget the story. I was my first semester, I was taking sociology of sport, and I'm dyslexic. Reading is really a challenge for me. And I was like in tears. I mean, I just could not keep up with the reading. Wow. And I was like freaking out. And so finally, one day, I just got to survive. And that was a demarcation that I can remember, because I started like, I just got to do it my way. And so I started reading the first sentence of each paragraph. And I swear to God, they're just run on sentence in social books. So that didn't really solve the problems. Then I got to where I just read the first line of each paragraph, and I would listen for the gist of what they were saying. I'd go to class and take notes. And I was able to go through that and get a minus in the class. And then a big turn was when it came time to do a research paper. It was, oh my God, I was just overwhelmed by it all. And it dawned on me that if I interviewed subject matter experts, I could just quote them and just bypass all the research. And I'm telling you those two stories because that was the first time that I had gotten into the world and started like, I'm going to just quit listening to everybody do it my way. Now, it turns out I swam for the same guy who coached Mark Spitz, which was probably the greatest coach of any sport of any era, any time. Most people don't know, but in like August 19th of 1970, Indiana University swim team on paper against the rest of the world in a dual meet would have won. I mean, that's how strong they were.
Wow.
I'm telling that story because this guy was the foremost expert in the world. And when it came to resting and training, he had a formula he did with everybody. And I learned to depart from it. And I always excelled in that. So the point that I'm trying to drive home is I began to realize I had to listen to me, not everybody else. So fast forward, I got to college and kind of moving along, and I was in selling group insurance and stuff. And all along the way, I was doing things my way. Well, back in 2007, it's a complicated story, but at the time I was looking to get into something, and a few people had mentioned like coaching, and I went and I was kind of checking out, and a friend of mine said, you know, you'd be really good at like coaching adults with ADHD. And I looked into it, and I went and got the training. And I was going through Coach Training Institute. I found myself at home. They were teaching concepts that I had been doing my entire life. I mean, I was like, this is actually a thing. I'm like, I just thought this is how it worked. And when I got into working with people with ADHD, I really found a home because so many of them were being told what to do. And forgive me for being intellectual, but if you know anything about statistics, you have some observation, you do a regression analysis in the mean, the bell curve, if you will, is, you know, everything in the middle is the average. And then you have 1, 2, 3 standard deviations from the mean. And simplistically, 2 standard deviation means covers 68% of the population. I'm like, but what about the people on the outside of that? And I kind of found a home. That's who I like to coach, the people that don't fit the norm. And it was my creativity with myself of doing it my way that really kind of helped me work with other people. And I got into that because at the end of the day, I think I coach people's attention and how they pay attention to it. And as I learned to let go of knowing all the solutions and problems, it really, the world started opening up to me a little bit. And, you know, it's kind of funny. I tell this story, and I think you had interviewed Ned Hollowell on your podcast before. Well, when they were releasing
And he has dyslexia. If anyone doesn't know that, you know, so he gets it, and you get it. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is kind of, I got Ned Hollowell is interviewing me on ADHD on his podcast when they're releasing ADHD 2.0. He's asking my experience, and I was telling him, like, yeah, you know, it's creativity and really listening to the individual one time. And I was telling the story. This is a true story. I actually coached somebody who had a smell-based to-do list. And you go, what? Yeah, this person came to me and they had an incredible sense of smell. And when they would smell something, it caught their attention, would linger for a really long period of time. And the coaching paradigm is like, well, they pay attention to smell. And through the questioning, we got to a smell-based to-do list. And you said, what does that look like? Well, it's a sheet of paper with crayons drawn across. And I didn't know it before it started, but crayons have odor.
Right.
And this person was able to associate. It was funny because I'm having this conversation with Ned Hollowell. He's like, what? Like, really? I'm like, yeah, that's attention. And so you asked the question how I got into it. It's basically I began to like notice how I think and how I process and trying to figure out a ways that would work for me. And so I got into this business and I've extended what I do to everybody else. And, you know, I'm so grateful to come in and talk about attention with you because I love attention. It's a great topic and everybody pays attention to things kind of differently. Right. My job is trying to help people understand thinking and attention as a process to organize or manage themselves from their cognitive behavior out, not their behavior in. Most people don't understand this, but if you have a cognitive constraint, working memory is a big one, and you design any or you try any organizational system that doesn't take that into consideration, it's not going to work. And so what I do is try to help people see that in their mind, if you will, so that they can manage it. Manage what will actually work for them. So long-winded answer. Hope that helps.
Yeah, no, it does. And I made a couple of notes here because I find this interesting that the two things that help people that have ADHD focus, one is exercise and, you know, and music or any kind of outlet like that. And you were a swimmer. Did I catch that right?
Yes.
Okay. And swimming takes discipline, right?
Or no? Yeah. Well, yes and no. So we'll digress. Is people think of exercise like it's something that you got to do. And yeah. Everybody, I swim 4 hours a day for 11 years, right? At the end of the day, exercise is repetitive and boring. Anything that's repetitive and boring is typically something people with ADHD struggle to do. So what's the issue? Well, I do a lot of presentations on, if you ever notice, people are exercising, the majority of them, it's a very social activity. They're with other people or they're watching a podcast or TV or at the gym looking at cute girls, or there's always something stimulating their mind. So whenever I'm coaching somebody who wants to exercise, we focus first on mental stimulation and exercise is a secondary activity. And too many people will come to me and say, you know, I got to exercise. I'm like, you know, you exercised a long time ago with a group of people. Now you're trying to do it on a bike downstairs in your basement. And it's boring as hell. You're not going to do it.
And you're an adult now and you don't have that coach standing there doing that.
Yeah. So I'm telling you the story is because it took discipline, but it was social. I mean, I was there with a bunch of people and I was very competitive. So what I was trying to do is beat the person next to me. Now to this day, I still swim, but always with other people. It's rare that I ever do it by myself because it's too boring. So I've actually had a workout partner since 1988. There's been different people. There was like Lars and Joe and Alan and Randy, but I always hooked up with that people. And so it's funny because people look at exercise as this thing that you're supposed to do. And if you don't solve the attention side of it, you're not going to do it.
Well, and it goes along with mirroring, right? When you're doing homework and you're sitting there, there's just something. I know that with my son, when I would sit there and do work with him, he would always do better, or other kids. Right.
Yep.
And so I found that very interesting. The other note I wanted just to, I was making notes when you made your opening comments, because two of them really hit home. And the other one was maturity. And we hear that a lot, especially with boys, you know, as they're growing up. And I've heard a couple of different statistics per se on ages. Everybody's different, of course. But if you had to kind of summarize the maturity level, what speaks out to you for most people? Because there seems to be this really different timestamp of, you know, going, you know, from home to college to college to the work field.
Yeah. So in general, I like, you know, they say basically, particularly a teenager, take 75% of their age. That's their executive functioning capability. Mm-hmm. So if you're dealing with a 20-year-old, you've got the executive functioning of like a 15-year-old.
Right.
As you get older, it slowly kind of starts to catch up at about 30, but that's executive functioning. The other part of that is a part of this is actually self-awareness. And self-awareness is one of those things that's interesting because I studied Dr. Russell Barkley's model on ADHD, and not to get into the details of it, but self-awareness means you have to confront yourself. You got to call yourself out. You got to be honest. And confronting yourself is very threatening. And people with ADHD struggle with emotional self-regulation. They tend to have a fight, flight, or freeze reaction to that. So there's a lot of people with ADHD that are not very self-aware because they kind of don't want to admit who they are, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of people with ADHD that are, they're mentally, they'll mature to a point in time, but there's a fair amount of self-awareness that's not there.
Yeah.
And so it can manifest and look like immaturity or lack of executive functioning, but it's like they haven't accepted. Now, I don't know why. I've coached a lot of people. I, for whatever reason, had a lot more awareness at a younger age than other people. Mm-hmm. And I've had the ability to self-regulate, but in general, you know, it tends to be behind, and I'm bringing that self-awareness piece into it because not a lot of people really understand it. And self-awareness is not your self-image, like who you project yourself to be. It's like coming to realize like who you are. So like, for example, I say, you know, I know that I probably should try harder to spell, but I'm not going to do it. And I say that because I should.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm not going to do it because, hell, I'm 58, right? And it didn't work for the first one. It's too much energy. So I'm just not going to do it because it's at the end of the day, when I pass away, I don't think they're going to say, well, it's because that guy couldn't spell. It was horrible. And so part of acceptance is like, I am what I am. I don't really care. If you got a problem that I can't spell, that's your problem. It's really not mine.
Right. Yeah.
That's self-awareness where a lot of people get caught up in the judgment of it all.
Right. Absolutely. And I think for our listeners, one thing that we should clarify is that a lot of people who have ADHD, there's the secondary diagnosis with it, whether it be dyslexia or anxiety or depression, bipolar, or whatever it might be. Yep. It always kind of goes in sync and it comes at different phases. You usually find out one at one point and one at another. And if you're lucky, you can find them both at the same time so that you can tackle them.
Yep.
Because as you said, awareness is the key. Right. Because once you know, you can deal with that. And one thing, it's interesting. I have an area on our blog where people will write in and ask questions for our guests. And someone asked a question, and so you're the first one that I am going to throw this out to, is the it wasn't age specific. So I don't believe it was any age. But a woman wrote and said that her husband deals with the knee jerk reaction. And he has ADHD, and I think she said ADHD and anxiety. And she said, we always deal with the knee-jerk reaction. So give us a tip, if you don't mind. This would be great because I'd love for her to listen to this. But if there's a tip for anyone, whether they're in high school or they're 40 years old or 60, how do you control that? Because, you know, I have my methods that I work with my son and other people, but you have your methods. So we'd love, what would be your advice to this person?
So first of all, a little bit of background. This is when I'm working with people and we start talking about knee-jerk reactions or emotions. One of the things I start talking about, when you think about an emotion, is a reflexive reaction. Mm-hmm. If you're threatened with your life, like if you feel threatened, you don't even have to really be threatened because the brain can't always tell the difference. But if you feel threatened, you go to a fight, flight, or freeze state. That's an emotional reaction. It's a primitive emotional reaction.
Right.
For you, there's danger. You're going to do something. When you get into, when you have an emotion and you have a reflexive reaction, you actually can't think.
Right.
You don't think.
Right.
So, and this is really important because most people don't really realize it. There's a great quote is, you know, thinking's difficult. That's why people judge.
Right.
And people will jump to conclusions. That's an escape from thinking.
Yeah. And this is the self-awareness, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so emotional self-regulation is a big part of ADHD, huge part. And it's the most difficult part for many to judge. And I say, like, anytime you say the word feel, you just escaped thinking. You're not actually looking at the facts.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit easier in kind of that environment when I'm dealing with something like that. But the idea really is, if you got ADHD, to begin to understand is those reflexive reactions typically are an emotional reaction. Mm-hmm. And if you stop and think about what's going on, it's usually something different. But thinking sometimes is so difficult, that's why people do it. And so the best way, really the only way that I've been able to work with it, it all starts with self-awareness. The hardest part about managing that is realizing that you're in that emotional state. Once you are, then you can do something about it. But it's just like the military, right? You know, the first thing, you don't panic. That's the pause,
yeah.
Right? And the realization to it. Now, in simple terms, I did an interview with Autumn Zatani in 2014. Autumn's in charge of all the curriculum for Sesame Street, the TV show,
right,
the YouTube
right.
channel, mm-hmm. the apps, et cetera. Season 43 was basically dedicated to self-regulation. The whole season was me want cooking me weight. And we started talking about emotional self-regulation and how they use the Muppets to train kids, like, this is help them name emotions and identify how they feel in their body and kind of get them to start to listen to their body, because your brain will lie. But the idea is, if you can feel that anxiety or that frustration, that's where you catch yourself, you belly breathe, you count to 10, and then you downregulate and try to brainstorm. So part of that reflexive reaction is beginning to understand how that feels in your body. Sometimes that can help people.
Yeah.
Before the last election, I absolutely loved it, because all my adults that were having that reflexive reaction, I'm like, if you're a Trump fan, I want you to watch CNN News. And if you're a Biden fan, I want you to watch Fox News. In a simulated environment, your sole job is to sit there, notice the anxiety and just calm down, practice realizing that it's an emotional and their words are just objects, and practice it like an athlete would practice something so that you become in tune with it. And so going back to your original question.
That's a great analogy and a great practice. Really.
Going back to your original question is I don't have a tip or trick. It's something that it takes a period of time for you to become aware of. And then even when you're in it, you actually have to choose to inhibit it when you're knowing that's happening. Some people can do it and some people don't. But
yeah.
I don't like to sugarcoat that emotional and that reflexive reaction. That's what ADHD is all about. It's the ability to use the thinking brain to override the primitive reaction.
Yeah, that's really good, because it's a process, right? It doesn't happen overnight.
Yep.
And it's really great if the person that is doing it is aware to get the help. So, okay. So now I'm going to flip the tables on you. So what advice do you give to the spouse that writes in that says, you know, what does she do? Right. Yes. It's her husband. But again, if he's not aware, he's not going to do anything.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he is or not, but let's just say that, you know, whether he's aware or not, what's the best thing that she can do?
Yeah. So, okay. This is tough. You cannot control other people. The best you can do is try to influence them.
We cannot control people.
You cannot control other people. All you can do is influence them.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, I got parents, I got spouses all the time coming in. Now, don't get me wrong. If you got a spouse and you're married to somebody with ADHD and they're unaware and they're off the wall, I mean, you want to do something about it. This is hard stuff. Like, I don't want to minimize this, but here's the deal.
Yeah.
The insight that I have is that you'll have a tendency to approach them in a way that feels threatening to them. They feel criticized. And what happens is that emotional fight, flight, or freeze kind of kicks in, and they instantaneously put up a wall. Love Melissa Orloff. She talks about in ADHD relationship, there's symptom response. Like, you send your spouse off to the store to get some eggs, and they come home with everything but eggs. Now, that's the symptom, right? You have emotional reaction because you're frustrated, right? And the person with ADHD, they feel threatened because of that emotional reaction. So they reflexively fight back. They're not thinking like, oh my God, I should have gotten the eggs, or maybe I should do something about it. That's left their head. They're instantaneously in fight mode. And the reason I'm saying this is when you're with somebody and you have a spouse and you're like, you need this to happen because you're feeling the pressure of it and you want it to change. And this is a general rule, but I find all too many people will begin to attack that person to get them to do that. And when that happens, they put that wall up, and as much as you're trying to help them, what you don't realize is they're just going to fight back because they're not self-aware enough. They're emotionally reacting to it. So the trick really is to influence them. do what you can by not putting them on defensive. Some people are easier than others, and some people are just not going to get it. And sometimes you have to play the ball where it lies.
Yeah, that's great advice.
It's not what everybody wants to hear, but sometimes it's better to accept that that person's not going to change and manage from there.
Yeah. And you know, that's great advice, not only for spouses, but for parents and also for teachers. And I love the fact that you brought up Sesame Street and the Muppets. That's a great way. If you're a teacher, we have a lot of teachers that listen to our program. And if you're a teacher that's listening to this, that's a great way to even show emotions is through by using puppets. That's really, because that's the, and I always emphasize that if you're a teacher, listen to all of these podcasts, not only mine, but to yours and everybody else's, because you will learn so much.
So I'm going to capitalize on that. When you're dealing with a spouse or a kid, typically what happens is the issue is between you.
Yeah.
It's confrontational. What you want to do is you want to get with them so the issue is on the other side of the table. Tangentially, I learned this from us. They can never get between an addict and a drug. But as a side, you want them to be on the side and you want to work with, that's the object over there. You don't want to be confrontational. And when you come to this side and you're doing puppets, right? You're not attacking them. You're acting it out in a way that they can begin to see it. That's kind of, in my opinion, from an attention perspective, why it's so effective, because you're not accusing, you're not attacking, it's not directed at them. It's this other thing. So the issue's on the other side of the table. And again, I just, being the attention person and what you said, I wanted to explain that so people could have a working knowledge of why that's so effective.
Yeah. And if you are a teacher and you're a woman, it's our instinct. We like to fix people. It's just, men may be the same, but I do know this. I have many friends that will try to fix their spouse. And I always say, you can't fix them, because they have to want to fix first. And then you can support the fix, right? I mean, you can support it, but you can't do it for them. So that's awesome. Thank you for that. So, okay. So moving forward, this is a favorite question. I just love to ask people who coach. So, with the pandemic and everything that's going on right now, what are the things, without saying who your clients are and everything, what are people coming to the table with? Because we talked a little bit before that people come to you on an emotional basis. And I really enjoyed hearing that. Would you mind sharing that? Because I think those examples are really good, because whether it's to get coaching from you or others, you know, it's good for the other person who doesn't have ADHD to understand, hey, the best gift I could do is to say, hey, if you want to get a coach, I'll support that.
Okay. So we have a little bit of time. I'd like to give a little background so people understand this a little bit. So not only are we doing this, but I can help, because I saw this in droves. I mean, in droves. So to do this, we've got to do a little tension exercise.
Okay.
Are you game?
Okay. I'm game. Always.
All right. I'm going to say 5 words in a second, very slowly. Uh-huh. When I do, please don't write them down. And if you feel the urge to repeat the words, please don't.
Okay.
When you're done, when I'm done, and when you're ready, I want you to repeat them back to me in alphabetical order.
Oh, good. Oh, okay. I have a producer and he's going to edit this out, but I'll play for now. Okay, go.
Hang on, everybody. Do you know she had emotional reaction right there?
Because of fear, right? Fear of
No. Correctly. I'm going to come back to that. Everybody just notice it. So you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. Teacher, zebra, kangaroo, bumblebee, hippopotamus.
Bumblebee, hippopotamus, kangaroo, zebra. What did I miss? I missed one, right? And I missed one.
Teacher.
I missed one. Teacher. Right. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Here's the thing.
But they were in alphabetical order. Yeah. You got to give me some credit there, right?
Well, they were, except for teacher. But here's the deal. What I want you to focus on in this exercise is you didn't learn anything new. You knew what all 5 of those words are. You could visualize them if you needed to. And you know what the alphabetical order is.
Yeah.
Okay. What you had to do is you had to load the information in your mind. You had to hold it. You had to pay attention to reorder it without forgetting it. Repeat it to me.
Yeah.
That is working memory. That is playing with information in your mind towards a goal.
That's interesting. Okay. Yeah, that's interesting.
Now, I asked you not to write it down on a piece of paper, because if you did that, it would make it easy if they were on index cards. Now that's thinking outside of your head. Mm-hmm. What you were doing is thinking inside of your head. Okay. Mm-hmm. In short, people with ADHD have a hard time thinking inside of their head.
And I'm ADHD, so I think I got a good score, right?
But here's what I want you to focus in on, everybody. You had an emotional reaction when I brought it up. You wanted to escape it from the get-go before I even got into it, because thinking was so hard. Yeah. This is important.
Yeah.
People with ADHD externalize it. They have to think out loud. A lot of people with ADHD talk a lot. They're not talking to you. They are thinking. Nonverbal working memory, neurotypicals, actually, they talk to themselves. And so you
constantly,
and I can't hear them.
Constantly.
People with ADHD, they actually say the words. People get confused. They're not talking to you. They're talking to themselves. Well, when the pandemic hit, everybody had to go home. There's nobody to talk to. It taxed their working memory.
Yeah.
And I'll give you an example in a second before I go forward. So what happened is they were all by themselves and they would hit a moment of ambiguity and they would have, like, they would escape. They would go do something else and they never went back to it. So part of working memory isn't just what I described to you. It's the retrieval of knowledge. So this is best described. There was a woman I was coaching and I find that 80% of procrastination is rooted in ambiguity. That's a conversation for another time. But I was explaining this to her and she was kind of arguing with me. And then one day she got it. She was working at home and there was a procedure or something, and she forgot something in that step. And she noticed in that moment that normally when she was in a work environment, she would lean over and ask a coworker and she would have the answer and be back to what she was doing within 2 seconds. She wouldn't even know what happened. Now she's home. She hits that moment. Her working memory's not working. She texts somebody and basically she went to go get a cup of coffee and never went back. Where I'm going with this is what happened with the pandemic. People with ADHD thinking is harder for them than everybody else. And when they're in an environment where there's resources and they collaborate, it's thinking's easier. So what happened in the pandemic is everybody went home, thinking was made easier, and everybody has escaped to YouTube or smoking marijuana or porn or whatever. And so now they're having an emotional reaction. I've got a motivational problem. It is a motivational problem to an extent, but it's because thinking has been made so hard. If we want to resolve it as an attention coach, we got to make the thinking part a little bit easier. Does this make some sense?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so most people don't realize is that, you know, we have labs in school because they're the best way of learning in certain environments. So what we did is we took that away. And so as a result of the pandemic, you know, I got to tell you, the mental health community exploded. I mean, I never had a wait. I mean, my waiting list is 10 deep. You got to pay to be on my waiting list. I never had that before because it's coming out in droves and everybody's right now being bullied. Like, you should just try harder. It's not, right. It's a working memory problem. It's a thinking problem that's not being addressed. That is the core of what's going on. And for those listeners out there, you're drowned in a sea of strategies or tips, tricks, and they're not working. It's not always that. It's the tools that you're using or the environment that you have is not helpful to your working memory. And that's why that stuff's not working. It's not that it wouldn't work in other environments, but if you're frustrated, it's not a focus issue often, it's a thinking problem.
That's fascinating. And one thing I do want to mention on that is when I was like, oh, wait, I'm gonna edit this out. And I was joking. But one thing that really caught my attention on that is I'm ADHD. My son is ADHD. I never knew till later in life. But the reason that there's 504s, if you don't know what that is, do some research, get your students some help out there. But regarding that, it makes a lot of sense on why, because they panic when they take tests. Many of them do. And they don't like to take tests. And then they answer things incorrectly because they're panicked. And so that's why some kids are kind of embarrassed by the 504. They don't want to go to another room. But it's because, wouldn't you say, would you agree with that?
Yeah. What you got back to is if you go back and listen to what we've talked about, everybody, have you noticed how often emotions have come up? There's an emotional reaction, whether you had a reaction when I gave you the working memory exercise, right? Mm-hmm. We talked about the reaction of going to your spouse on self-awareness, right? Mm-hmm. When you feel threatened, like I haven't done very well in these tests, you have a reaction. You have a reaction if I'm being segregated in a room. Dr. Barclay 10 years ago was the one said, you know, emotions are as big a part of ADHD as anything else. And it's still not in the diagnostic criteria, but it's emotion, 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 emotion. And for many people, that is the biggest challenge of ADHD.
Absolutely.
It looks like a focus issue. It's emotional reaction to things.
That's
like, I don't.
No, you're absolutely right. And didn't mean to interrupt you there. But I wanted to ask you on that, because you do a lot of speaking and you do a lot of coaching as well. And I want, you know, we're all human, right? So one thing I didn't want to overlook is you've got to have off days, right? So how do you focus, right? Or excuse me, maybe he doesn't, I don't know, but most of us, we're human, right? And let's say it's a podcast you're getting ready to do or something, and you're just not yourself. What do you do, Jeff, to focus?
Okay, so I can tell you what I do is I just say I'm off. But that doesn't, yeah, great. Why? So what happens is when you are having, when you're not of sorts and you're difficult, and you start to scramble, a lot of times you start to panic, and you're starting to put pressure on yourself. And when you put, that's an emotion, and you get paralyzed because you're putting pressure on yourself to perform, and you kind of go forward and you get all kind of tensed up. When you do that, you just kind of try harder, and you're actually, your mind goes blank. You can't think of anything, right? So it's in those moments when you're there, I find it a lot easier. Oh, I screwed that one up. Like, so because of my dyslexia, I can't tell you how many times I'm reading like a bio or messing up the name of a guest. Like, oh, there goes my dyslexia again. I screwed that one up. Like, it's easier for me to say I messed that one up, or, you know, I'm doing a presentation. This isn't my A game today. I don't know what happened. Like, can you imagine this? Or I remember I was doing some videos in my formative stages and screwed up a couple of times. The content was really good, but I couldn't get the experts back. And I put the thing at the beginning, like, you know, the hell with perfectionism. We're advocating for procrastination. So this content's really good, but there's a lot of audio and visual. Like, you can listen to it. Just close your eyes and listen to this thing. But if you watch the words and the suffering sink, so I find it a lot easier just to say I screwed up, because it just takes all the pressure off, and then I can get back online.
Right.
So I kind of escape it by it is what it is. And I've learned over the years, I've embarrassed myself a couple of times. But it's in the end, if I just admit I screw that one up or I fail that one and just move on, I usually get righted a lot quicker by admitting that.
And people are forgiving. I mean, they, especially when you watch a speaker and they say, you know what, can I start over? Or I did not mean to say that. It gets the audience laughing, right?
But I also want to say that this was a profound moment. I went to the, what's now the annual conference on ADHD. It was a CHAD conference. I think it's 2013 or 2014. And my YouTube channel had just come out. And at the time, Shire was doing some educational stuff and they had some videos that were out on the internet. And this guy comes up to me, you're the video guy, right? I go, yeah. I go, you got a favorite episode? He goes, you know what I like about your stuff? He says, it's homemade. He said, that Shire stuff, it's all overproduced. It's like, it's not real, but yours is homemade. Like, I believe your stuff. That has always stuck with me, because I'm a human.
Yeah.
And I'm not holier than thou. And I've always had that. So that helps me in those moments when I'm off, is just be human. In a sense, you're perfect when you're imperfect as a human. It's when you are trying to mask it and cover it up or be somebody you're not, it gets really difficult. Now, people, I've been really embarrassed. I've been humiliated a couple of times before. I can't remember them right now, so it wasn't that bad of an experience. Yeah. But I found my refocus is just stop, kind of pause, and just sometimes let it go, because then I can think. It's not emotional. I can think and I can get back on track.
Right. And one of our slogans is, you know, we all get so busy that sometimes we need to stop, take a moment and refocus. And and I preach that constantly, because I think it's in whether you have ADHD or not, you know, even people who don't have ADHD can benefit from coaching if they're a business owner or a speaker or whatever that is. And so I wanted to highlight that too. So do you just coach people that have ADHD, or do anybody, or?
I literally consider myself an attention coach, but nobody's Googling attention coaches, right? So I specialize in ADHD because it's attention related and that crowd is in pain as opposed to, but majority of my practice is that, but I coach people with learning disabilities, dyslexia, and I've coached a lot of spouses of people with ADHD. And I've had other people who just like creatives. There's a lot of creatives that it sounds like they have ADHD. They're not. I like the ADD crowd because they're fun, because I can help them understand. It's like the exercise that we just did. I can help. That's working memory. That's a big impairment. We can walk through. I can help them see the underlying reason that's kind of going on. They're like, oh my God, I can see that. And I do more of that just because it's exciting. Cause they're like, oh my God, I get it. And I love that. I get it.
It's we connect.
Bottle over here is all about
and we connect. I mean, you can tell I have ADHD and you know, you did. And I wanted to ask you that. When were you diagnosed?
98.
Okay. Awesome.
Well into it. And people ask me all the time, I consider my dyslexia a bigger problem.
It's
the bigger problem, but at the same time, it's not an asset, I'd say. I've had to overcome it. And because of that, I think differently. And so my success has been mostly because of my dyslexia, although it's been a really long road to hoe. The ADD side is there, but it's not as big a deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you said that earlier, one of the things that I did is I thought I was getting dementia and I had three businesses. So everything was kind of crazy for me. And I was raising a child that had ADHD. And so I hired an ADHD business coach, and that was the best money and investment I ever did. So I would highly encourage that. So one last question. First of all, you and I could talk forever and ever and ever. So I'd love to have you back. But we always ask one big question to all of our guests. And that is that it really, you know, music to me is healing. Music can lift you up. Music can take you down. Music can, to me, it's powerful. And I'm passionate about that. So for you, Jeff, let's say you're going to speak at a big event and you've got to get game on. You know, you're not yourself. You've got to get in the game. You've got to prepare yourself. What is the music or the genre or the artist that you listen to when you get in your car and you're going to that meeting?
So there's always a backstory with me. So forgive me.
No.
I first saw Jimmy Buffett in concert in 1979, 80, I forget.
Yeah.
Anyway, I saw him, I've seen him at least once per calendar year, 40 years straight. My only miss was the pandemic.
Ah.
So I do listen to like Jimmy Buffett, and what he sells is escapism.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, metaphorically, if I'm jumping in the car, whatever, it would be changes in latitudes, changes in attitude, and the final line is, if we weren't all crazy, we would go insane.
We would, absolutely.
I've seen more than I can recall. These changes in attitudes, nothing remains quite the same. Through all of the islands and all of the highlands, if we couldn't laugh, we would all go insane.
Well, listen, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on again. And like I said, there's a couple of things that I would love to talk to you about in the future. So I'd love to have you back. I said, I am so glad. If you want to find out more about Jeff Copper, reach out to him, check him out on his website, on his podcast.
The website's digcoaching.com. You can access everything. The podcast is Attention Talk Radio that you can find anywhere, like Stitcher, Tuned In, you know, whatever, just search whatever your favorite is. And then Attention Talk Video is just on my YouTube channel.
Exactly. You know what? I think I'm dyslexic. Did you notice that? I put them behind each other. So that's another test for me. Anyway, thank you so much. We graciously appreciate your time.
Thanks for the time.
This episode was sponsored by Refocus, the Creative Office. If you haven't checked out their products, go to time2refocus. That's time2refocus.com. Right now, as of today, they have their academic calendars on sale for $29.49, and you get a gift with purchase. So go to time2refocus.com/shop, and you will see all of our products that include password books. And we have calendars, academic calendars. We have anxiety journals that are guided, ones for adult, ones for young. We have college university timeline sheets, and we've got some really exciting products. So check us out and subscribe to all of our social media as well as our YouTube. Thanks so much. Send us a note. We'd love to hear from you and check out some of our upcoming episodes. I think you're really going to be excited. So have a great week. Don't forget to stop, take a moment, and refocus.